Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. From CPCC's Maroncas campus in Huntersville, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins, and this hour, a public conversation about growing pains. The entire Charlotte area is experiencing them as nearly 100 people a day move to town, but no part of town is feeling the squeeze quite like the Lake Norman area. In 1990, the populations of Huntersville, Cornelius, and Davidson totaled 10,000. Today, the number is in excess of 100,000 people, and that has led to incredible traffic congestion, controversial toll lanes, rampant development, concerns about schools, the need for more services, and a desire to not kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Each of these towns has something to offer that they want to improve and protect, including their individual identities, but they have learned that they must learn to work together for the sake of the region. And we're going to spend this hour talking to people in the trenches, dealing with all of this, studying the problems, and trying to come up with and implement solutions. Later in the hour, we talk about housing, land use, schools, the economy, and more, but we begin with a deep dive into one of the region's biggest challenges, transportation and all that entails. And for that, we welcome Bill Cox, Transportation Planning Director for Huntersville, to the conversation. Welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening. Scott Cole is with NCDOT. He's a popular guy in the room. He is a Deputy Division Engineer in Division 10, which serves the five-county area, including Mecklenburg County. Thank you for being here, Scott.
Glad to be here.
Bill Russell will be with us in the entire program. He's president of the Lake Norman Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And David Borax is here. He's a longtime resident of the area and an expert on it, having operated several publications covering the region. He now keeps regular tabs on this region as a reporter for WFAE News. Welcome, David.
Hello, Mike.
We're not going to let you email us or anything like that tonight, but you can watch us on Facebook Live if you'd like to from the Maroncas campus here. We do have an audience assembled. Good evening to you. Nice to have you here. So, David, let me start with you because the numbers tell the story behind this, and I alluded to a few of them, but let me read them all. In 1990, the population of Huntersville was 3,000, Cornelius 2,600, Davidson was the big dog with 4,000 people. In 2017, Huntersville's population, close to 60,000, Cornelius over 30, Davidson just over 13,000. That means in 27 years, over 100,000 people in this area. You're a longtime resident. From just anecdotally, your personal observations, what has this meant to you and to the people around you?
Well, it's been amazing to watch how fast this area has grown. I moved here in 1993 from Boston, which is not an area that's growing. In fact, it's shrinking. And the city of Boston, I think, at that time had more residents than Charlotte. Now Charlotte has blown that out of the water. But, you know, the population here has grown 10 times since I've lived here. Think about that. Think about any group of people that you know multiplying by 10 in such a short amount of time. And it's forecast to grow even more. I'll talk about that in a minute. But when I moved here in 1993, you know, I-77 exit 25 was brand new. There was a barn and a silo sitting there where the Target is now. For those of you who've been here for a while, you may remember this. It was a lot of farmland here. You know, exit 28, it had a Food Lion. And there was a restaurant there called Ham and Eggs. No Burger Kings, no Starbucks, no fancy restaurants or any of that sort of thing. It's really changed an awful lot. Of course, I'm mentioning this, there are benefits to the growth. When we moved here in 93, we had to go to Charlotte to get a decent slice of pizza or a spaghetti or something like that. There just were not that many restaurants up here. Back in those wonderful days, you could drive anywhere and get there in a short amount of time. And that has changed gradually over the years. When I first moved here, I lived in Davidson and worked at the Charlotte Observer, and my commute to work was about 25, 30 minutes. And just in the 7-8 years that I worked at the Observer, by 2000, My commute had grown to 45 minutes or longer, yeah. Some days an hour or longer, and that's really where we are right now.
So is transportation, traffic, congestion, a lack of enough road space to accommodate cars the biggest issue you think facing this area since you've lived here, or are there other things that would top the list?
You know, I think there are other things that are on the list as well. I mean, I don't think we should get just into the mindset that it's only about roads. I mean, there are lots of things that have changed about the area. For one thing, we have a lot more people living next to each other. We have crime that we never had before. You know, there have been murders in all of these towns that have really shocked people. We still think of ourselves as being the small towns. But another thing that happens when you grow really quickly is that that sense of community is lost, or it is threatened anyway. And, you know, when I was running the DavidsonNews.net website back in 2007 when former Mayor Randy Kincaid retired, and I did a sort of an exit interview with him. And I asked him, what is the biggest challenge facing Davidson in this region in the years to come for your successors? And he told me it was community building. He said, if there's one thing the community needs to do is to figure out how to stay together as a community. And I will tell you that, and that was 2007, you know, we're a lot farther down the road now, and I think we're really struggling with that right now. We are a group of individual communities, both within our towns and among the communities, and we have different ideas about things, and it's a challenge to grow that way.
So when we decided to do this program, and we announced that we were going to do this program, we got a lot of, not flack, but we got a lot of comments from other towns other than the three towns represented here, saying that we're part of this region too. But we decided to focus on this part of the region because it's the fastest growing, and it's completely contained in Mecklenburg County as opposed to spilling into another county. So for people who are listening to us, who don't come up here, who live in Ballantyne, who are out in Matthews or someplace like that, who don't know the geography, what are we talking about tonight? We're talking about Huntersville, Cornelius, Davidson. What are the boundaries? And we're about to talk about a lot of roads. Where are those roads and where do they go?
So we're talking, if you're in the Charlotte area and you are south of where we are right now, it's just come up 77. And these days, we often talk about where we are by exit numbers. So we're talking about,
it's like New Jersey,
everything north of I-485. So 23, 25, 28, and 30 are our exit numbers. There's attempts right now to maybe squeeze another exit or two in there. I don't know if we'll talk about that tonight. But I'm not sure if this is, it's about 100 square miles, I would say. We're bordered by Lake Norman on the west or the northwest. And the lake was something that was not a factor here until 1963. I venture to guess that most everybody who has lived here for a while does not remember that. You know, it was such a long time ago. But it really did set the stage for where we are right now and the growth that we're seeing, because it became an attraction. It became something that drew people to the area. The other kind of big thing that happened was I-77 being built, which was, it opened in 1975. So if you've been here for not that long, think about what this place might have been like without the lake there, without 77 there. It was a rural area. Now we are stretching from county boundary to county boundary, from Lincoln County and the lake on the west all the way over to Cabarrus and Rowan counties on the east, and Iredell just north of us. So that is an area that, you know, as you mentioned, it had 10,000 people in 1990, and we're squeezing more and more every day.
So, I-77 gets all the attention since the toll lanes were so controversial, and we've done so much talking about that. We'll probably touch on it, but not much tonight. I want to talk about some of the other roads, because it seems that the I-77 thing, there's nothing we can do about it. And Bill Cox, you have pointed out that we are about to face a tsunami of major transportation projects in just the next 10 years. How many of these projects are either underway or close to being underway on the drawing boards?
Several of them are almost underway. In fact, we had a start of doing the interchange at Gilead Road and I-77, which, as you pointed out, is exit 23. Mm-hmm. We had to stop that because of some utility conflicts, and Scott can speak to that better than I can. But we're teed up on projects to begin in 2020, 2021, 2022,
and are you talking just about your area of influence, Huntersville, or are you
primarily
talking about the whole
but
area?
Also up in Cornelius and Davidson as okay. well. I mean, I did use the term tsunami. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the two farmers standing there watching the dog chase the pickup truck, wondering what the dog was going to do when he finally caught it, and we finally caught it. We've asked for these investments for all of these years. There are reasons that we have finally gotten them. We're going to rebuild, not on top of I-77, but we're going to rebuild the interchange at Gilead in 77, the interchange at Sam Fern in 77. We've already rebuilt the interchange at Catawba Avenue in 77. We're going to widen Highway 21. We're going to widen 115 south of 485. We're going to widen NC-73, basically from 16 in Lincoln County to 29 in Cabarrus County, all the way through us. North Cross Drive Extension in Cornelius.
West Catawba Avenue.
West Catawba Avenue. Thank you, Scott. Bookends on either side of the Catawba Avenue interchange, the roundabouts that are going in Davidson, the Potts Sloan Beatty Street connection in Davidson that sort of parallels 115, Main Street in Huntersville. So
half a billion dollars worth of work.
That's Scott Cole from NCDOT, and it seems it's been my impression since I moved to North Carolina in 1985 that Charlotte gets short shrift when it comes to roads. We're not top of mind, or we haven't been, mm-hmm. with the legislature. How come all of a sudden we have all this stuff coming down the pike?
Okay. In 2013, the legislature changed the way that funds for transportation was allocated, mm-hmm. and divided within the state. So prior to that time, there was an equity formula that, quote, equitably spread that money across the state. That was enacted in 1989. In 2013 came the Strategic Transportation Investments Law. Okay, so that wasn't a new group, a new pot of money, but it was a different way to spread the money that is available. And instead of building projects that are build it and they will come type projects in other parts of the state, we're building projects where there are issues, where people have already come.
So are we? We're obviously playing catch up. Right.
Correct.
Will we see more of these? Will we see more money being funneled into projects in this region because we're finally going to get the money we deserve?
We are already seeing that.
Okay.
Yes.
And when you talk, Bill Cox, about the tsunami of road construction, and you just went through a litany of things that are about to happen or are underway, this area is already suffering from congestion. What are they in for the next X number of years that it will take to build all these projects out?
I'm going to retire before that occurs because the complaint now is going to be who in the world thought to put all of North Mecklenburg under construction at the same time? And that's going to truly be an issue of moving around up here during the construction period, getting to and from the businesses and helping those businesses survive during
right.
that period of time.
So you've bought stock in Orange Barrel Companies. Is that what you've done?
A good retirement investment,
so,
yes.
So, Bill Cole, one of the challenges I've heard about is to find ways to get local people to stop using I-77 as a local opportunity to travel from one interchange to the next or one town to the next. And some of these road options that you're building out will give people other options and perhaps better options. If you're successful in that, if these things get built out, will that do the trick? Or will this simply take up the slack on what we need and the growth will continue and therefore these things will be obsolete the second they open, Bill?
They will not be obsolete the second they open. We plan roadway improvements for a 20-year lifespan in terms of their capacity, not always successfully right. because we have grown faster than we anticipated. But what you will find in a growing metropolitan area, which we are blessed to be in, rather than one that's declining, as David pointed out about Boston, you're not going to build your way out of congestion. I think Mayor Knox pointed that out last week when he was talking with you. You're not going to pave your way out of that. You're going to have to find other ways of right. organizing yourself.
Scott, what's your take on that?
Agreed. We're well behind the curve. We will be making a dent in it, certainly, improving mobility, improving safety, but I don't think we're ever going to build our way out of it.
How far behind the curve are we? If we'd started 5 years ago, 10 years ago, would we be in the pickle we're in right now?
Well, when you talk about 10 times growth in 30 years, it's hard to catch up with that. Mm. So 5 or 10 years, I'm not sure that would be, a tremendous change, but we're not going to build what we build and walk away. There'll be other opportunities as well.
Bill Russell is here. He is he's the president of the Lake Norman Chamber of Commerce. And as the president, I know that you're concerned about business and you're concerned about the economy and making sure that people continue to want to live here, want to move here, want to do business here, and you're facing all these road projects, and you're already facing terrible congestion in some of these areas. What are you telling business, that the light's at the end of the tunnel, you just have to survive it? What are you telling them?
Well, I will tell you that I-77 is the most critical issue facing us. And unlike what Bill said, where he said that it shouldn't be a local road, it is a local road. It is our local road. We only have four north-south corridors. One of them dead ends into the lake because we built a lake over top of the road. You have 115, but it runs through the downtowns, and I don't think that's going to be the option. Bates Ford Road has a stone wall going back to 1780. We have one road. We have a 32,500-acre body of water that limits where we're going to build other roads. That is our local road.
And, now, and will continue to be, no matter what you do?
I think it's going to continue to be. I do believe that Governor Cooper and Secretary Trogdon are seriously interested in trying to make sure that we solve this congestion issue. And one of the ways that we can do it is through the hardened shoulders concept that has recently been brought up. And I think that's an opportunity that we have to explore.
Now, do you want to explore that? This, you're talking about hardening the shoulders of I-77 so that that road, that can be part of the roadway, the free roadway.
Absolutely. You take the shoulders out there right now and you look at using those during the peak driving times. So between 6 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock at night, when we have peak times, that's when you're able to utilize the shoulders and take the traffic off of there. Right now, we're going to be dealing with heavy congestion. This isn't just a quality of life issue when you have congestion out there. It's an economic development issue. Right. We have four main arteries of the heart. If you clog up one main artery, the body dies. We do not want to kill development in the Charlotte region.
See, I knew someone would lead us to I-77, and you have done the job. Because I know that the chamber is one of the groups leading the charge to do something about these toll lanes, and one of the things that you want to do is, I think, buy them and make one of the lanes general purpose, right?
Absolutely. We want to see this project finished. We want to open it up. And after that, we believe that NCDOT needs to buy out this contract, take one of those lanes and make it a general purpose lane, and make one of them a managed lane managed by the state of North Carolina. We have a congestion issue out there. We need another general purpose lane.
Scott, yes, NCDOT is where you work.
That's right.
What's the chance of that happening?
Well, the secretary is working on that.
Really?
Okay, he is actually working on that. And, you know, the peak period shoulder lanes that Bill's referred to is an interim solution. While we can work on other solutions, including, you know, prioritizing and working through the process to determine if we can add and when and how we can add additional capacity to 77.
David.
I just want to add into the conversation here that, you know, our solution to our commuting problems is not just I-77. There's got to be some other things that we do. And as has been mentioned, we're looking for other north-south routes. Every time I go to one of these transportation planning meetings, somebody's got a map up with some lines that may be recent, they may be old ones, where we think we could put another road that goes north-south. We definitely need to do that. There's a lot of political difficulty in doing that, yeah. And that's one thing. Another thing is commuter rail is something that this area has looked at. Charlotte Area Transportation System would like to do that. There are political and corporate issues there. The company that owns the rail line that comes up here doesn't want to use it for this. And so we have to work on that for a while. In the meantime, the other solution seems to be other kinds of commuting than one person per car. With the toll lanes opening, there will be an opportunity for people to take the commuter bus. There will be more commuter buses, and they will be taking the toll lanes. And that could turn your hour and 10-minute commute into a 35, 40-minute commute for just a few dollars. That is one thing that CATS is pushing. Other kinds of carpooling is another issue. I mean, will people do that? You know, if you get two other people in the car with you, you ride in those toll lanes for free, and you beat that system. So,
when the opposition first emerged to the toll lanes, Scott, it seemed like there was a great political will to see to it that they were built and that Sintra was going to run them for 50 years and come hell or high water. Is that an accurate description of what was going on behind the scenes? And if the secretary is working on some of these other ideas, now that the thing is being built and almost ready to open, what's my question? did it come as news to people in Raleigh that, A, this was going to be controversial, and B, that this was not going to solve the problem?
Your first question was it come hell or high water? No, it wasn't. It was seen as a solution to a problem. And the solution, I mean, the problem is we had 26 miles of highway to improve, right? So at the time, the funding wasn't available for it, and this was seen as an opportunity to move forward with a project that could get a lot accomplished in a very short amount of time, and it has. It is not seen as a be-all to end-all solution to congestion. However, it is a way to provide a reliable travel time day in and day out, year after year.
So you don't see it as you don't think that when these lanes open that the congestion will magically improve in any way, or
It will improve significantly because some of the traffic that is in the current lanes will come out of it and go into these expressions.
But what about the cars coming from up north, and they don't know that the toll lanes are coming up, and here they are toll lanes, and they haven't got a transponder, and even if they do have a transponder, they're not sure that they want to pay what it is up on the sign, and they'll just stick with the free lanes, and then you got the local traffic who are not going to pay the toll to go one exit or two exits, so they're in the free lanes. Isn't that going to increase congestion in the free lanes?
I don't believe that it will. Our modeling shows that it won't. And in addition to that, you will have multiple opportunities to select the express lane versus the free lane. So you'll be going down the route, and you'll see congestion in the general purpose lanes, and you'll see a free path in the express lane, and away you go. You'll get to the next exit point, you make the same decision, and over until you reach your destination.
Bill Russell.
Most people aren't even aware that trucks will not be able to use the managed lanes. They have to stay in the general purpose lane. So we're gonna congest our economic development. This, we have to put people before partisanship. In Raleigh, they have to understand, you've got Republicans that don't want the Democrats to win, Democrats don't want Republicans to win. We have to put people before politics, and that's not happening, but we're gonna have to have political courage, and we need to do the right thing here.
So, Bill Cox, if you develop these other roads, if you improve these other roads that we went through the whole list of a minute ago, 21 and all these other connecting roads that go east and west, and they become two lanes in each direction with a median and turn lanes, and all, are people liable to use them more than they would I-77, given the fact that as you build them, if there's not already development on either side of the road, there soon will be, and it'll be shopping centers and businesses and housing developments with traffic lights, and won't they not use them because it'll become equally congested to what it is now? Because you can't build enough roads to deal with the traffic.
They'll actually use them more. And the reason is that as our communities mature, which they are beginning to, I think Cornelius is approaching building on most of the land, and so they're going to start to approach the rebuilding stage of their community. But as you build, what you find in as you mature as a community, that maybe 30% of the travel that occurs on a daily basis is to and from work, mm-hmm. and the rest of the travel is for some other reason. It's to go to school, it's to go to the park to take your kids to soccer practice, it's to go to the library, it's to go to the grocery store. And so as you mature, you will find those destinations come to you. As the rooftops that David mentioned mature, then the retailers and the services will follow those rooftops. And so you will use the local roads to achieve that 70% or more of the travel that you need to make on a daily basis, if we're smart about how we do our land use. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it starts with the land use. And what do these roadways help you to achieve in your land use?
And once again, you're from Huntersville, but are people in Cornelius and Davidson that you know about, your colleagues, are they equally concerned about land use?
Yes, absolutely. I would say that the three northern Mecklenburg towns have led the charge for a more rational mechanism, a more rational pattern to deal with your land use.
You've stressed that all these road projects that are about to come online or about to start construction have the goal of moving traffic all kinds of traffic, not just single-family cars,
correct,
but bicyclists, pedestrians, transit, and by transit, I guess you mean buses, single-occupant vehicles, and driverless cars. You're not kidding about planning 20 years out, maybe more than 20 years out, correct, for driverless cars. Is there a big call among the people who live in this neighbor for bicycle lanes like there seems to be in Charlotte?
Yes, there is. And again, depending on how you set up your land use patterns, then it becomes rational to use what I call human-powered transportation to achieve some of your daily trip-making, bicycles, on foot. Maybe you can even someday see scooters up here as you do in my neighborhood in Charlotte. I'm not sure that's a benefit, but that's a whole other conversation.
Of all these, I'm not sure which one of you to ask, but of all these projects that we've alluded to, the 21 widening and all these interchange developments and the I-77 toll lanes and maybe hardening the shoulder in the future, which of these has the greatest potential for easing congestion and making life better for people who live in this region?
We got to do all of them. I mean, and then some, because many of these projects are really, as we said before, catching us up to all the development that we approved in years gone by. I don't think any one of them is going to answer it entirely.
I'd agree with David.
So you don't prioritize any of them.
Yes, I think one's more critical than the other, but I think you have to take the whole pie. Absolutely.
And you have to add to this the local streets. The streets that we've talked about thus far this evening are very large and substantial in North Carolina DOT roadways.
Right.
And so what you also find is the local connectivity that allows the local trip making to occur not on these big roadways and thus freeing them up for that longer distance travel.
Okay, and I hate to rub salt in the wound by even asking this question or even going down this road, but the state has said that the future of all highway construction going forward will be toll roads. Is that right? Is that still their position?
No. NC-73 is not a toll road. US-21 is not a toll road.
Were they just talking
West
about...
West Catawba is not a toll road.
Were they talking about interstates then?
We're talking about interstate capacity. And we haven't made that prediction. The CRTPO is, as far as the planning organization for this area, is moving forward with a toll managed lane network to help us manage the resource.
In other parts of the state, the regional planning organizations will have opportunities to vote on this and whether they want to go there or not. I suspect that after they've seen what's happened here, they may not be so keen on it.
Bill Cox.
Let me suggest something to us, and again, because I've been here so long and seen the growth that David has described. Back in the early 1990s, there was a project to widen I-77 south from downtown Charlotte, from 85 down to Nations Ford Road.
Right.
$65 million at that time, that's about $106 million or so in today's money. Add one more general purpose lane in each direction. Okay? That actually relieved congestion on I-77 South for about 8 or 9 years. Back to that, we're growing as a metropolitan area, it filled back up. South Carolina went in and widened I-77 to 4 lanes in each direction. It's filled back up. You're simply not going to you're not going to tolerate not only the taxation, but the absolute destruction of your community by continuing to widen the interstates lane after lane after lane after lane. And so that's what drove the Metropolitan Planning Organization that Scott described into a philosophy of, as we build capacity, as we add capacity, find a way to manage that capacity,
right,
so it has long-term value.
Bill Cox is Transportation Planning Director for Huntersville. Scott Cole is with us, Deputy Division Engineer for NCDOT. Bill Russell will continue to be with us on the panel for the rest of the show. He's the President of the Lake Norman Chamber, and David Borax is here from WFAE News. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about other aspects of growing pains that this region is experiencing, living with, and trying to figure a way out of in many cases. And we'll do that when we come back in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. This is a special public conversation about the impact of growth and development in the Lake Norman region. We're coming to you from the Maroncas campus at CPCC in Huntersville. And we spent the first part of the program talking about the single biggest bugaboo plaguing the region, transportation. For the rest of the hour, we take a deep dive into other aspects of growth, including how it is affecting the economy, housing, the quality of schools, the challenges faced by Huntersville, Cornelius, and Davidson in maintaining their individual identities and the character of each town while also working together as a region. And we get a glimpse of the future as time allows. Again, we're going to talk to the people in the trenches dealing with these challenges, trying to find solutions and implement them. And Jack Simoneaux is Huntersville's planning director, a job he's held since 2001. He is with us. Thank you for being here.
Good evening.
Andrew Grant is the town manager of Cornelius. Good evening to you.
Thanks for having me.
Rusty Knox, welcome back. He's the mayor of Davidson.
Thank you, Mike.
And we're holding over two of our guests from the last segment, Bill Russell, the president of the Lake Norman Chamber of Commerce, and David Borax from WFAE News. Andrew, let me begin with you. We just talked about all these transportation projects coming online in the region, but you can't build, as was just said, you can't build enough roads for all of this. It just expands to fit the space. And while all these projects are underway, there will be increased congestion. Cornelius is smack dab in the middle of all of it as the middle town in it. So how are you planning to deal with it?
Right. So we're at ground zero, but as a previous guest mentioned, you know, careful what you ask for. And we have worked very hard to obtain all these transportation projects and appreciate the cooperation of all of our partners, CRTPO, NCDOT, in bringing these projects to it that we have desperately needed for all these years. Our community knows that they're coming. They're very happy it's coming, not happy about the construction. However, we will get through this, and we have preached a lot of patience, and we'll continue to cooperate with our partners at NCDOT to implement the most reasonable construction schedule that we can have.
And Jack Simoneaux, Bill Cox, your contemporary in Huntersville, believes that you have to plan for all forms of transportation. But the principal form of transportation for most people is their car. Why are other forms so important, and do you see them being used more frequently than they are today?
So, as Bill mentioned, it's the idea of allowing a mixture of land uses to occur. So folks that want to take trips to grocery or a movie theater or something, it's available. And so if you, you know, make sure as these roads get widened, you've got bike paths, you've got places, sidewalks that can handle the folks that want to get to different places, it will get used. There's a greenway that was built under I-77 that will take a large apartment and townhome complex and let folks get to a Cat's Park and Ride facility on the other side of the interstate, mm-hmm. whereas before they would have to go across if they wanted to with their vehicles. So, if you build these and you think your way through, they'll absolutely get used.
Because I know that you want to have a walkable, mixed-use community, a community with a high quality of life. I think that's one of the things that you have stressed. Aside from, excuse my ignorance, I may be completely off base, but aside from Brookdale Village, mm-hmm. What other areas would you consider to be walkable?
So Rosedale is a really interesting example. It is nothing more than a strip commercial development, except you've got offices, you've got apartments, you've got townhomes. I've had staff move in there, and they buy little carts to purchase their groceries and walk the sidewalks to get to it. So Brighton will be ultimately in that direction as well.
We're going to hopscotch through a lot of different things in the time we have remaining. And one of the things I want to talk about is the lake itself, because that's why we're all here, is because Lake Norman exists. I think we have a different story to tell had they never dammed up the Catawba and created that lake. It's the magnet that's attracted all this growth. Unless you own property on the lake, you only have two access points for public use. Bill Russell, the chamber has pushed since the mid-90s, I believe, more access for the public. What's taking so long?
Well, initially, you also didn't have the beach that we have now at Ramsey Creek Park. For a long time, there was a ban from Mecklenburg County that said that unless you owned property on the lake or a watercraft, you couldn't access the lake. Mm-hmm. And we've said that that was economic discrimination. And we pushed really, really hard to make sure we had public access. We have that now at Ramsey Creek. Duke Energy is looking at several other venues to bring public access to. Lincoln County, they're going to be bringing it to Mountain Island Lake in a couple of years. So they are looking at other areas to have a public beach.
The lake is a tourist attraction. I'm not sure how it is if you can't get to it, unless you own property. How important is that to the Lake Norman Chamber to make this more accessible?
I think it's extremely important. I mean, Lake Norman is the nicest man-made lake of either of the two Carolinas. We have 520 miles of shoreline. The very disappointing thing was when you had folks that would drive up, and they would come great distances, and they would drive to the Chamber of Commerce and say, where's the lake? And we would say, well, you're here. And where can we go swimming? Oh, we got to go up to exit 42 to Troutman. And you could see the look on their face and the dejection. And I know there have been some critics that pointed out the beach at Ramsey Creek is a very small beach. But if you're a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kid and it's your first chance to go to the beach, or you're a young couple that is struggling and you may not be able to go to the Outer Banks or to OD or something like that, it's a wonderful, wonderful asset that we have. And I'm so thankful that the Mecklenburg County Board of Commissioners and Karen Bentley, who was our commissioner at the time, led the charge to change that.
Would I be wrong in saying, Andrew, that Cornelius has the most shoreline along the lake?
Not at all. 72 miles of shoreline.
Okay.
All the peninsulas. And I want to add to Bill's point here. So we're very fortunate to have the lake. And through land use, and I might be jumping ahead to some of your topics here, through land use, we're able to plan not only for now, but for the future. And we have in our zoning plan, and we've skillfully crafted this so that we can have future developments on the lake so people can come enjoy the lake. Mm-hmm. Much to your point, it's not as accessible as we all want it to be, but in the future we can, for future generations.
But since you have the most shoreline, if you make it more accessible somehow, I'm not sure how you do that in any of these jurisdictions, but if you do, won't that bring more people, more congestion, more crowded roads?
Hence the reason for wonderful planning for all these experts who are up here on this panel. And it's years, if not decades, worth of work so we can manage that as we move forward.
Are you confident you can?
I'm confident we can get there. Absolutely.
Okay.
Working together.
Let's talk about schools, because I've been here a long time, and every time schools come up and the intersection of schools and the northern part of the county, there seems to be a great deal of friction between the northern part of the county and CMS. There's been a long time feeling that Huntersville, Cornelius, and to a large degree Davidson, are not getting the attention that they deserve from CMS. Is that due mainly because of the rapid growth that the region has experienced? Rusty, I'll start with you. You haven't said anything yet.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I would tell you that the growth in our schools has been exponential, and every school that we have up here is a benchmark school as far as the quality of education we're delivering to our kids. I mean, I'm a big supporter of CMS. I'm a product of CMS, as my children are. And there was a lot of friction in the last bond where we didn't feel like we got our fair share. Mm-hmm. And I see that end of it. I also look back at previous bonds and realize what we have gotten.
If the schools are good, is it simply that they're overcrowded? You want new physical plants, more buildings? What is it that you want?
I think that's the thing. I mean, at the end of the day, with the growth that we've had, we have schools that open. The day they open, they have mobile units in place. And that's the rubric that CMS has used to determine capacities and redistricting that has created this environment of overcrowding.
Are the problems pretty much the problems with CMS pretty much the same through all three towns?
So speaking for Cornelius, the concern is capacity, just as Mayor Knox mentioned. We do have high quality schools both with CMS, and I'm a CMS product as well, proud product of CMS. But we also have an upcropping in recent years, and probably will continue with charter schools and private schools. So we have a mix, a lot of options in the North MEC. And speaking for Cornelius, we've taken a very proactive stance in analyzing our options so we can keep all of our options open as we move forward. And again, it's back to that management for the future.
Let's talk to me about Huntersville, Jack.
I'd rather not. However, our town board has created a study committee, and so they're looking at what options are out there. So their work will be finished next month, and so I would just say stay tuned. We do have a number of charter schools in our jurisdiction. Right as I left the office today, we were getting ready to permit another one on Eastfield Road. So, you know, we do have some charter schools that are kind of filling a need, but there are some significant issues such that the town board had to create this study committee to see what we can do to make sure everybody has a good quality education in our community.
Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that would be House Bill 514, which was Bill Brawley's bill from last year. Bill Brawley's the representative from Matthews who pushed a bill through the legislature, which has now been approved, which would give Matthews, Mint Hill, Cornelius, Huntersville, and it would have given Davidson an opportunity to run their own municipal charter schools. Davidson opted out of it. Why?
Well, a lot of it was the confidence we had in CMS, and we looked back at the bonds that had been approved in years past, and we felt with 11 schools that have been approved in the last five bonds up here, we were getting our fair share, and our confidence with CMS was good. The alternates that Andrew speaks of, we've got Community School Davidson, Davidson Day, so we've got two privates. We've got Woodlawn School and Pine Lake Prep just to the north, so there are alternates out there as well, but we just felt as a town, because we're at the far extreme of the county, we're pretty well insulated from redistricting, and we felt okay.
So Jack, since you don't want to talk about schools, I'm going to make you talk about schools.
Thank you.
Is this one of the things that your study committee is looking at that you're alluding to?
Absolutely. That's the genesis of it, is to look at the charter school issue and the CMS, and which path do we need to go.
Which way do you think they're leaning?
I have absolutely no idea. I really don't. I have no idea which way they're going.
Andrew, what about Cornelius?
Right. So 514 for Cornelius was all about preserving options for our future, for all the reasons that all the panelists have mentioned. I think anybody would be foolish to dismiss any option. And much like the committee in Huntersville, the Cornelius Committee is evaluating all those options, including a charter school option.
And what they're evaluating is this something, number one, that's needed? And number two, is it feasible for the town to do it? It costs a lot of money to build a school and to operate it. And so that would be an expense that traditionally has been handled by the county, which the towns will be taking on now. And John Anarella, the mayor of Huntersville, I think he's here tonight, but he has told me that before this committee got very far down the road, that he thought there might be a way to do this without raising taxes. I think the question they're trying to answer is whether that is something that is possible to do it without raising taxes.
How, from the Chamber of Commerce's position, schools have got to be a major concern, right?
Absolutely, and here's the great news. I think Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools is one of the best school systems in America. I really do. And I also believe that Lake Norman Charter School, one of the premier charter schools in America, and we have some of the finest private schools, whether it's Davidson Day School, the Community School of Davidson, Pine Lake Prep. So you have choice. And we have a lot of educational opportunity. The one thing we have to do is, just like they just said, we have problems with capacity. We have to get more classroom space.
There's one thing I was actually reading through tons of material about the three towns, and I know that you're working on a lot of efforts collaboratively, and you meet and talk with each other all the time because you have common interests. The one thing that all of you are in agreement with, and I was surprised about this, was you all see a pressing need for a magistrate. Uh-huh. Evidently, the nearest magistrate is on 4th Street in Charlotte.
Correct.
When did this become obvious that you needed your own magistrate? And there seems to be some reluctance to make that happen, right?
Well, this conversation started years ago. Karen Bentley started this 15 years ago or better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me personally, one of the things that I look at is not the convenience of having a magistrate's office up here for the police. And it's not necessarily about spousal abuse, domestic violence, child abuse. For me, it's involuntary committals of young adults and at-risk teens. Because having to go to Charlotte, a lot of those kids slip through the cracks when they could be observed for 2 or 3 days and diffuse a potential tragedy.
So as I understand it, and you've been talking about this for a while now, that this requires legislative approval. Is that correct? And it also requires that your three towns plus Charlotte kick in about $35,000 a year to fund it. Is there any significant political support for this?
So as far, and this is new information, we learned working with the county that it's the Constitution prevents us from providing local funding for a magistrate.
Okay.
So it has to be state funding. So the bill that you're referring to not only asks for five additional magistrates for the county, but also state funding.
Okay. And you are you optimistic that the people in Raleigh see a need for this and that you'll get what you want?
That remains to be seen, to be very frank.
Does Charlotte want you to get what you want?
I know that I haven't had conversations with Charlotte proper, but the county is definitely in favor and behind the North Mech having right. the magistrates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Housing and tax revaluation. Let's talk about that. In the late 80s and early 90s, Davidson was the big dog, as I said at the very beginning of the program. And now you're the smallest of the three towns. And I think we talked about this when you were on the program recently, Rusty. Well, that was that by design on your part. It does seem to be because of fairly strict growth policies in Davidson. Is that why you haven't grown as much?
Well, I think that...
Is that a good thing?
It is a good thing for us. I mean, it's pushed the value of our homes up. And, you know, we commented last week that it's not something I'm necessarily proud of, but Davidson is the most expensive town in North Carolina right now. And that's you know, when we have challenges of affordability in town we work with as well, it is a challenge.
And one of the reasons you're sitting in the chair you're sitting in is because of disagreement in Davidson over exactly how the town should grow. People voted for you, so they must agree with your vision. What is your vision for how the town should grow?
Well, we're unique. I mean, for me, this is my Davidson, and I think our residents of town take ownership of town as well. You can go from here to Maine and find 10 more Davidsons, but this is our Davidson, and we're unique. And we like being unique, and we mm-hmm. like being different, and we like being a small college town.
But to put a finer point on it, you know, in my neighborhood, the houses were selling for a couple $100,000 when we bought them 10, 11, 12 years ago. In the most recent revaluation, they are over 500, most of them, and there are some million-dollar houses in our neighborhood. And I could not have afforded to move there. And I think the issue that the towns face, all of them, is with house prices rising like this, how do we keep the population somewhat like it is right now, or do we turn it into a wealthy resort, you know?
Yeah, and affordable housing is a regional issue all over the Charlotte region, particularly in your area and particularly in Davidson as well. How are each of your communities balancing the need for affordable housing with the fact that you are sitting on growing and incredibly expensive real estate? I'll start with Jack.
Okay. So in Huntersville, we have kind of break our area up into three different areas, the eastern side, the western side, and the central. And the central is I-77, 115 corridor.
Right.
In that area, our zoning is very permissive in terms of what folks can do. They could build single family, duplex apartments. There's no density limit. And they could mix attached housing with single family housing as well. So there's a lot of flexibility built in our development code that lets folks have, you know, a townhome or an apartment or a single family home in one subdivision. They also could have accessory apartments for renting it out to either college students or to family members for that matter. So what we have found in Huntersville, our average home sales price in 2017 was only about 5% higher than Mecklenburg County as a whole. So we are in a fairly good position, a little bit different than our neighbors to the north, but we have some diversity in a lot of different choices in housing. And we're a huge land mass. I mean, it is absolutely huge compared to the other towns. So there's more area to grow.
And we have 2 minutes left, so I want to get to Cornelius because you have this bifurcation in Cornelius where you have expensive real estate on the lake and not so much on the other side of I-77. How are you dealing with affordable housing and the need for it?
Right. So historically, and I've worked for the town for 16 years, we've taken a very proactive approach in increasing our housing stock. We're literally providing houses for individuals who need them. And we've worked with our partners by funneling approximately $2 million worth of grants through state and federal agencies, working with Habitat, working with Davidson Housing Coalition for 70 plus homes, I think was the last count that I had for Cornelius, and we'll continue to do that, as Jack has mentioned and Rusty has as well. Unfortunately, land is disappearing, especially in Cornelius. Right. So our next evolution is planning for the future where we can strategically place affordable housing.
And I have about 35 seconds left. Rusty, can you do it?
Well, you know, our ordinance says that 12.5% of all of our housing will be affordable. And we are at about 16% right now. So we're above our own curve, but it's a fight every day to make sure that people that deserve to live in Davidson have that opportunity.
And Bill Russell, to keep this place a place people want to move to, want to live at, want to stay, how do you do it? Are you confident you can do it?
Well, you're not a community if your teachers and your police and your fire can't live there. So we got to make sure that we have that affordable housing.
Bill Russell is the president of the Lake Norman Chamber of Commerce. Jack Simino is the planning director of Huntersville. Andrew Grant, the town manager of Cornelius. Rusty Knox, the mayor of Davidson. And David Borax, a longtime resident of Davidson and with us here at WFAE News. Thank you all for being here. I know we've solved all of the problems.
Thanks, Mike.
Of Lake Norman region tonight. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.